Can you guys hear the Hell's Bells music here in StreamYard?
Yep.
But
very yeah, low. We can hear your satanic music, your devil okay. work.
You know, I have to figure out how to
stream
Blog Talk Radio through here instead of using the phone. I think there's a way to do it.
I think you got to get rid of Blog Talk Radio, to be honest with you. That's point number one.
I don't know. Look at the facts from Sunday. Sunday's show was a killer. So
really? Okay. Well, convert them all over to coming here. Point number two is we need a different intro song, dude.
All right. Here we go.
Because I want to jam out and rock out to the song, dude. But, you know.
Can't beat the old AC/DC, that's for sure.
I'm a rolling thunder, pouring rain, coming down like a hurricane. Yeah, I know.
All right, here we go. All right, well, Kufar Akbar, everybody, hello. This is, of course, another edition of Radio Free Kafiristan. This is a radio program dedicated to rightly dividing the truth between Christianity and Islam. We examine the evidence for both of these faiths in order to arrive at the truth. It leads us to this end. Thus go I. Shalom. Peace and blessings. Of course, this is your humble host, Eric Thekifer, coming to you live from the cavernous depths of the Kafir Cave in Dar al-Harb, Kafiristan. We are here every Tuesday evening at 5 p.m. Central Standard Time, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And in Nigeria, it's late, and you are in our prayers. And I will be discussing that here. No, I think Chris was going to discuss that. We'll get to it soon enough. I'm live casting on Zoom. No, I'm not live casting on Zoom. I still have that in my notes here. I'm live casting on StreamYard, and we are live casting in three separate places on StreamYard. We're live casting in the Cross and the Crescent discussion group Facebook page. We're, of course, live casting on the Radio Free Kafiristan Facebook page, and we're also live casting in YouTube. So we are kind of all over the place these days. The StreamYard, I was thinking about going back to Zoom, but I'm thinking the StreamYard thing is going to work out. We just need to get better at using it. That's all. It's just a learning curve.
Star fuck Allah.
Yeah, okay. So let's see. Remember, a kafir is someone who does not heed the beliefs and prescription of the religion of Islam. This is according to the New Encyclopedia of Islam. And Kafiristan is indeed Dar al-Harb. It is the house of war. These are the lands that are not ruled by the Sharia, unlike Pakistan, Afghanistan, Turkmenistan, Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, Exeteristan, and Sukhistan. Those are all led or ruled by the Sharia, and nobody is planning a family vacation there anytime soon, as far as I know. Okay, if you want to call into the show, the call-in number is, as always, area code 319-527-6706. Area code 319-527-6706. Okay. Tonight, the topic is going to be Christian persecution. And what I want to do is I want to open the show up with a news clip that was broadcast on Fox News about a year and a half ago. And for anybody that doesn't know this, as far as Christian persecution is concerned, and Christian persecution is one of the oft discussed topics on this show, is because it's so rampant around the world. And even though it is so rampant and commonplace around the world, it is one of the most least reported events, occurrences, or however you want to categorize it, in the news media. We often hear when, here in the United States anyway, if a Muslim is attacked for being Muslim by anybody, I mean, it could be a Christian or it could be, you know, some thug out on the street, it makes the nightly news and it's there for a week. And more often than not, not every time, but more often than not, We find that these acts of violence or persecution against them, perpetrated against them, are nothing more than invented hoaxes of all things. So what we're going to do tonight is we're going to look at the Christian persecution. The Christian persecution around the world has indeed approached genocidal levels. And when I talk about genocidal levels, we're not just talking about the killing of Christians, which is about 12 per day. And in a world you get 7 billion people, that's really not all that significant. However, killing a Christian for the sole reason of them practicing their religion should be very troubling for not just Christians, but every religion, because if it can happen to us, it can happen to you. So you too should be concerned. So let me go ahead and share my screen here. And what I want to do is I want to play this clip from Fox News that discusses Christian persecution.
Can't hear it. Did you forget to click the little checkbox that says play audio? Because we're kind of hearing it, but it's not. So close okay. It out, redo no, it.
I did. Hold on just a second. Where do I do that? Adam?
You unshare, and then you share again. And when you share, there is a checkbox on the bottom screen which says share audio as well. So.
Okay, so stop screen share.
Now share again.
Okay.
On the bottom of that new screen, there is a checkbox that says share audio.
The left-hand corner.
Share audio. It's right there. I see it. It's right there where it says share audio.
Well, of course it's right there where it says share audio, because that's what we're saying. It says share audio. Yeah, amazing how that works. Okay, all right.
Okay, here we go. Can you hear that now?
Yes, loud and clear.
Okay. Released at the request of the British Foreign Secretary, says Christian persecution in some parts of the world is, quote, close to meeting the international definition of genocide, with Christians being targeted by extremist groups in the Middle East, Sub-Saharan Africa, and East Asia. For more on this, we bring in the president of the Iraqi Christian Relief Council and senior fellow of the Philos Project, Juliana Tamarazzi. Juliana, thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you for having me on, Molly.
It's really startling to see that sort of figure, that takeaway from the report, that it could potentially be reaching genocidal levels. Also worth noting from this report, 80% of religious believers who are being persecuted around the world are Christians. Should this be a worldwide wake-up?
Absolutely. There has been a genocide that is already underway and perpetrated by ISIS. As you know, Secretary Kerry announced this as a genocide of the Christians of Iraq and also the Yazidis. But this has been going on for so long. For example, in terms of Iraq, the Assyrians, also the Chaldeans and the Syriacs of Iraq have come under persecution starting 2003 until today. Our numbers were 1.5 million today, down to 200,000 people.
Okay, let that last thing that she said sink in. The Chaldean Christians that have lived in Persia for two millennia have been reduced from 1.5 million to 200,000. 1.5 million to 200,000. And why is that? It's the practice of the Sharia by the Islamic State.
And look at Sri Lanka. Look at what happened there. Look at what's happening in India. Nobody's really talking about India. So we're grateful for Secretary Hunt and also Ambassador at Large Brownback for really stepping up to do something in a positive way, in a more meaningful way. But there's so much that needs to get done still worldwide. According to Open Doors report, 1 out of 9 Christians, Molly, across the world are being persecuted today.
And of course, this causes not just potentially death, as we're talking about genocide, but also people being pushed out of their homelands and the religion where it perhaps had a stronghold being forced out of areas where Christians live. I want to take a listen. This is the British Foreign Secretary Jeremy Hunt speaking in Kenya.
around a quarter of a billion Christians being persecuted, 3,000 losing their lives last year alone, and that's increasing. And there are many different reasons for that. Religious conservatism, politicians playing on people's religious prejudices, state-sponsored oppression, terrorism.
He also talked about political correctness. Do you think that plays a role?
Absolutely. Actually, I believe the death of most of the people that are suffering today is truly because of the political correctness, because the world turns a blind eye to this. And when we are politically correct, we are sympathizing with those terrorists that are destroying communities and erasing histories. For example, the Assyrian people in Iraq, our history, they're trying to erase our history by destroying our monuments and really pushing out us from the homeland. But you know what, Molly? Persecution looks different in different parts of the world. For example, let's take Iran. According to the International Christian Concern, they did a report. In 2017, there were 16 former Muslims that were persecuted. But in 2018, 171 former Muslims, and also three Assyrians that were that are being persecuted today, Pastor Victor and his family, for example. In Egypt, they are giving the Christians a hard time to legalize churches. Mm-hmm. We saw what ISIS did in Sri Lanka. So the way we answer every persecuted situation, it has to be different. Right. For example, Boko Haram in Nigeria. We have to deal with them differently.
And perhaps these horrific attacks in Sri Lanka also will be seen as a wake-up call. Juliana Tamarazzi, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me on. Thank you.
Okay, we have to remember that those attacks in Sri Lanka were not perpetrated. They weren't perpetrated by on Christians. They were perpetrated on Easter worshipers. And this was one of the attempts in the media to try to marginalize what is happening worldwide to Christians. If you look at the stats, I was wrong on that one stat. She said that it went from 1.5 million down to 120,000. In Iraq, in Persia, essentially Persia. One out of nine Christians worldwide is persecuted. 16, what was that? One year it was 16 former Muslims are persecuted to 171. These stats don't lie. Numbers generally don't lie when it comes to persecution. And tonight what we're going to do is we're going to list several examples of that. I have a couple of you guys that wanted to present a couple of them off the bat. So if you want to come up on mic, go ahead and feel free to do that. I think Chris wanted to come up first. I'm not exactly sure. Is Chris
what up,
there?
Eric? Yeah, there you
are.
You
yeah, okay. There you are, sir.
I'm here. All righty. So, of course, we understand that Christian persecution is at almost to genocide level. So I'm going to read some reports here. So the interim report said that the main impact of the genocidal acts against Christians in Exodus and that Christianity faced being wiped out from parts of the Middle East. It warned the religion is just before I say this is we all remember that Islam claims to be the fastest growing religion, right? Here's why. It's warned that the religion is at risk of disappearing in some parts of the world, pointing to figures which claim Christians in Palestine represent less than 1.5% of the population, while in Iraq they had fallen from 1.5 million before 2003 to less than 120,000. That's almost 1.4 million dead. Then, of course, the evidence shows not only the geographic spread of anti-Christian persecution, but is also increasing severity. Now, on to more. It must be noted that some of the groups monitoring Christian persecution around the world put together the number of Christians suffering various forms of persecution at as high as 600 million. The Pew Research Center has reported that the number of countries where Christians are subjected to a degree of government-enforced restrictions and communal hostility has grown from 108 in 2014, to 128 in 2015, and to 143 in 2017. This is number of countries, people, not number of people. The ACN's most recent research shows that between June 2016 and June of 2018, particularly grave violations of religious freedom took place in 38 countries, in 17 of which minority faith and Christianity, figuring most prominently among them, suffered instances of severe discrimination. And then in 21 nations, ACN found evidence of outright persecution, even to the point of death. Thomas Hain Geldren, executive president of the ACN, said that Pope Francis, I'm not even going to read that because of course he's going to say it. But anyway, the precise number of Christians who were killed because of their faith remains unclear. Reports show a fall in the number of deaths during the period of June 2015 to June of 2017 to below. And it's at 100,000, still shows that the level of violence aimed at Christian remains severe. The most recent mass killings of Christian happened in Sri Lanka, when on Easter morning of 2019, some 150 Christians died in strikes by suicide bombers, three churches, and God protect those people in those countries. ACN research is showing that Christian persecution is mostly sharply on the rise in the south and east of Asia, in countries like Myanmar, India, Pakistan, China, and even in North Korea. That the religion is now a hotspot for persecution, taking over that dubious honor from the Middle East across Africa. Of course, jihadist violence against Christians remains at a critical levels. For example, ISIS affiliate Boko Haram has perpetrated genocidal attacks targeting Christians in northern Nigeria. In the last few years, the group has suffered significant military defeats and loss of territory it held, but remains a danger to Christians. The focus is now on the attacks by Muslim Fulani herdsmen on Christian farmers in Nigeria's middle belt, with many observing pointing out at the herdsmen's sophisticated weaponry as a sign the attackers have financial backing. Some speak of an effort to Islamicize the country. So that's about all I got for right now, but this is definitely what we see. So when we hear these Muslims saying that, yes, Islam is the fastest growing religion, just look at them straight in the face and say, yeah, within a 5 or 6 year span, almost 2 million Christians were killed in the Middle East. And at least 1,000, I would say at least 4,000 to 6,000 Christians are dying every few months in the Middle East and in Africa. But yet you Muslims can have four wives, and you get them all pregnant. So you're having all of these children and you're killing all of these Christians. Yes, that's why Islam is the fastest growing religion, and that's how Islam is going to start taking over the world.
I think you're spot on with the rapid growth thing. It's not the fastest growing religion because the proselytizing and bringing people into Islam because you're converting them. The reason why it's the fastest growing religion is because of birth rates. I mean, this is not some Islamophobic type answer here as to try to marginalize why it is the fastest growing religion. When you marry off your daughters at a young age where they do not have any opportunities to go to college and to pursue a career, their sole purpose in life is to have children, and they're going to have lots of children. I mean, if you're marrying your daughter off and she's 14 years old, she doesn't even have a high school education, and she's, you know, maybe the third wife or fourth wife of somebody, she's going to have a lot of kids. And she, by the time that, you know, somebody that a woman here in the West gets out of college at 22, finds herself in a career, starting a career, she's 25 now, then she decides to get married. you know, she's not going to have as many kids as somebody that was married at 14. And by the time that she reaches 25, you know, she's already got, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 kids. It's not hard to figure out why that it is the fastest growing religion. I would also say, oh, by the way, it's the fastest shrinking religion when it comes to apostasy. It's a wash when you look at the number of Muslims here in the West that apostatize from Islam and compare that to the number of Muslims or people who convert to Islam here in the West. It's essentially about the same. So when you start saying, well, you know, so many people are converting to Islam, yeah, but then again, so many people are leaving Islam. And even some of the, you know, your most popular Islamic leaders are saying it's going to be like a tsunami that's going to wipe you out when the word, when people in the West are exposed to information that is they're normally shielded from in Islamic countries, in countries where you are not allowed to criticize the Quran. You are not allowed to provide a critique of Muhammad, and to do so is considered blasphemy, is considered being a traitor. Go ahead, Brad.
Well, just to add to that, just to let you know, that scholar that you mentioned is Yasser Qadhi. He actually said that. He said multiple times. Well, he's one of them. There are other ones, but he actually said, listen, there's a video of him where he's giving this lecture where they actually said, do not go to Yale or Harvard, wherever he went after he graduated from Medina. And he said, why not? And they said, no, because they will teach you things that are haram. And he said, but I want to be exposed to this stuff. I want to answer this stuff. And he concluded in this thing where the East or the Muslim countries, they have no response for this, okay, what is coming at them. Where it is funny. Now, you can take Christians, for instance, Bart Ehrman. He goes to Princeton or Harvard or whatever, okay, after graduating seminary or school, whatever. He went to, here in Illinois. Actually, I think he got his undergraduate here in Illinois at a Christian college. But when he was exposed to this, he actually lost his faith, not over that, but over the issue of suffering. But point being is this. If your religion cannot stand up to the scrutiny of skeptics, then what kind of religion do you have? Yeah. You know what I mean? If you're not trained in this, no, I'm saying this for Christian audience as well. Okay. All right. If we are not training, okay, our Christians in the church, young Christians who are going off to these liberal sectarian colleges, okay, to understand logic, understand reason, which was what? Fueled by the Reformation, which was fueled by what? Christians, right? Okay. Then they're not going to be able to stand up to the test of it. And let's face it, Islam cannot stand up to this test. Their whole argument on, well, the Quran is perfectly preserved. Well, no, it's not. And do you see what I'm saying? I mean, these simple little things, okay? If Muslims cannot train their children to stand up to that, that's what it would say, do not go to the secular universities. Where Christians, we say, no, train your children to be able to stand up to this and send them to the liberal universities. Do you see the difference?
Does that make sense? Yeah, when you send them to the universities in the East, what are they doing? They're learning to recite. They're learning to memorize. They're not learning to analyze. And they're not learning to dare I say, criticize. And what I mean by criticize, I don't mean be critical of everything and saying, well, that's a bad idea, Muhammad. I'm talking about providing a critique of your book. To question it is considered apostasy. You look right there in that little green book called Reliance of the Traveler. It is apostasy to question anything that is in the Quran, and it's also apostasy to question anything that has been made a consensus ruling on the Quran. We don't have that here in the West, and this is why here in the West we can send people to and well, we can send people to the moon, and we can send Land Rovers to Mars, and then you get in some of these other countries where they don't allow this type of thought, and they can't even build a lawnmower, for crying out loud. I mean, the difference.
Well, they got no grass in the desert, brother. How are they gonna?
Okay, that's true. They don't need a lawnmower.
They can't build a sand blower.
Okay. Well, they can't. You know, they can't. They just do not have that level of technology. And the reason why is they're not brought up questioning things like we hear, in the West. And when you start talking about the criticism and not being able to stand up to the criticism, this is indeed a great example of it being a religion of affirmative action. It needs some type of special protection, special protection in academics, universities, special protection in the media, where they shield a lot of these stories, but also anybody that would dare to criticize. You're the one that is labeled. You're the one that is marginalized. You are the one that is called all these dirty little nasty names that they throw out at you for daring to criticize the Quran, for saying the Quran is anachronistic, for saying the Quran is historically incoherent, for saying that Muhammad did not live a life worth emulating. He lived a life that was actually pretty repugnant. To say these type of things, and which are true from their own authentic sources, their most trusted sources, in the Sahih Hadith and in the Quran itself, is Islamophobic. It makes zero sense. This is how civilizations die, where they sit there and they allow people to bully them into silence. And here on Radio Kafiristan, we will not be bullied into silence. All right. I wanted to touch on a couple other things. If you guys don't subscribe or get over to or have not bookmarked the Gatestone Institute, I would highly suggest that you doing that. I was trying to turn around early, and I was trying to look for the book from the author of this article that I'm going to read excerpts from. Raymond Ibrahim is his name. I'm sure the majority of us know who he is if you know anything about the Christian persecution. And he writes an article here in the Gatestone Institute every month outlining the different attacks perpetrated on Christians throughout the world. And he just doesn't include Islamic countries, but he also, I mean, the number one persecutor of Christians, I mean, let's just face it, the number one persecutor of Christians in the world is North Korea. They have the worst record of human rights in the world, the worst record of religious freedom in the world. And you have a ever-growing, thank God Almighty, an ever-growing underground church in that country, but they are heavily persecuted. So he does report on that, and he does report on the persecution that occurs in China. But he spends a lot of time focusing on the religious persecution, one religion persecuting the other, because those are secular persecutions. North Korea is largely atheist, and so is China. And, you know, anything, if you know anything about communism is essentially a godless social philosophy, if you will. But Raymond Ibrahim, he goes all over the place as far as where his reporting is concerned. And on the 29th of October, or the 29th, I'm sorry, the 29th of November, he publishes his article, and it's titled "The Court Validates Child Rape, Persecution of Christians, October 2020. So what he does is he hits all kinds of different articles, and he brings them in a particular summation. So what I'm going to try to do is I'm going to try to summarize his summation, if that makes sense. He starts off with little bullet points. The first one is one of the men captured confesses that he was promised a monthly $2,000 payment for fighting against Kafirs in Arsaka, or something, I can't pronounce that word, and an extra $100 for each beheaded Kafir. And then he goes on to say, Kafir, often translated as infidel, is Arabic for non-Muslims who fail to submit to Islamic authority. Let's go to France. Here in France, on October 29th, a Muslim man who wielded a knife entered the Notre Dame Cathedral. We here on this show know about this. But my question is how many of your average, everyday, run-of-the-mill Americans know about this? You have a guy enter the cathedral, shouting Allah Akbar in the Notre Dame. It's in Nice. And he beheads a Christian woman and stabs two others to death. So you have somebody going into a church screaming Allah Akbar, beheads a woman, a Christian woman worshiping there, and kills two others. Shoe on the other foot. Put the shoe on the other foot. Can anybody opine here in the not the Zoom room anymore, but the StreamYard room? Could anybody tell me what would happen if this was, let's say, a Christian going into a mosque, let's say in Egypt, or let's say Syria, and did the same thing? What would be the outcome of that? Can anybody come up on mic and tell me what the outcome of that would be? Not all at once, guys. Not all at once. I guess everybody's pleading the fifth tonight. Maybe I'm not on mic. Can anybody hear me there?
Yes, Eric, I'm here.
Good night. I think you guys are making me think.
No, it's okay. We are here, but I saw that you are asking question and your answer, but in Egypt, situation is, if I speak from my experience, because I lived in Egypt for 40 years, situation is very hard. You can't, if you go to Egypt, for example, you can find the churches with high walls and make of thick cement. And we ask why you are doing high walls.
No, hold on. Yeah, why? Why high walls around churches in Egypt?
Because the on Friday, exactly after the prayers of Jumu'ah, Friday prayers of Muslims, they go out and they are full of hate against Christians. They can take some rocks from the street and throw it through the churches. And many people in the past were injured, and some of them died inside the church from these rocks, because it's heavy rocks. They throw it to the church. Then all churches, you can see like very high wall, like 3 meters height or 6 feet height, to prevent anyone to throw rock inside the church. And the building of the church is far from the wall. There is big distance from the wall till you reach the church. And this is it was surprising for me when I came here in the West. I found the churches just three or four steps to go inside the church. There is no wall, nothing, just the parking of cars. Then you go to the church, which is different completely from Egypt. Also, I said before, maybe in Pact of Omar, to take permission to like make renovation in a bathroom in Egypt and in bathroom inside the church, it's a big issue. You should take the permission to renovate just the bathroom, to take it from the president of Egypt. You will go to the city or the place that you live in or the church resides in, and ask them. They said no, go to the higher authority. You go to the minister, you go to the higher prime minister, go to the higher authority till you reach the president. The president is the only person that give you a permission to make a renovation in inside the bathroom. To build a church, it's something else. It may like take permission, may take like 10 years to take permission of building a church. Also, you are not allowed to pray inside your house. I speak about Egypt. If someone see you praying inside your house, this means that you're making your house a church, and they may burn your house. They may kill you inside your house, and this happens every week.
How are they going to find that out? I mean, do
sometimes someone open like a small part from the window. Then anyone passing in the street can see person praying, standing, and there is like a place put like a picture of Jesus or pictures or any picture, and praying towards this picture. Because most people there in Egypt are Orthodox. They don't pray to the picture. It's not idol, but I mean they put pictures inside their house, and if anyone see you standing and like don't move, just praying in the position of prayers, they know that you are praying, and they may burn their house with the people inside it.
Wow.
Yeah, it happens many times, especially in Upper Egypt, far from the capital, Cairo. It happens many times. It's regular. Last time was 10 days ago. Last time was in Minya, about 300 kilometers from Cairo, the capital, and was 10 days ago.
Now, this, okay, so, okay, let me just wrap my mind around this. So if you're, let's say you're, the majority of the Christians in Egypt are Eastern Orthodox. Is that what
you're saying? Yes, okay. That's the majority.
And so if they are caught just praying in their house, you can be put in jail for this.
How can they get them praying in the house? If I find them standing and they are like two or three persons, the father, mother, and their sons and daughters, and standing, and usually in Egypt they pray towards the east.
Where are they supposed to pray?
They pray to the church, but not all cities in Upper Egypt have churches, because it's very hard to build a church in Egypt. Then people try to pray inside their houses. It's normal. They can't go to the church because the nearest church, like 50 kilometers, they don't have cars. They are very poor people. Mm-hmm. They can go all this distance. They pray inside their houses. As soon as they saw them, they burn the house.
Wow, that's just. I mean, people here in the West. I mean, me sitting here in the United States, and you hear stories like this. It's like they're almost unbelievable.
And this is a normal case. It's every week, every 10 days. Last time, 10 days ago, you can check the news. It's like normal. You can't pray inside houses, especially in Upper Egypt.
Okay, so let me ask you a question then. If you've experienced this, a lifetime of this, I'm assuming. If a Muslim here in the United States, somebody that has grown up here in the United States, grown up here in the West, or maybe let's just do it this way. Let's say somebody is a convert to Islam here in the United States and tells you that you're wrong. Muslims are not supposed to do that to other peoples of faith.
It's I tell him, go read the Tafsir Ibn Kathir for Surah 9, verse 29. The Pact of Omar is written there, and it's applied in Egypt since they invaded Egypt in the 7th century till now. Even they say in Egypt that the state is secular, but it's not secular inside the hearts. Inside the hearts, they have the same idea back to Omar. No one can build the church. They should leave the churches, fall down, and build instead of any houses or mosque or anything. There is nothing called renovation for a church. You are not allowed to pray in your house. Otherwise, it will be church in the future. All this happens in Egypt.
And then I wanted to double down on that comment about there's no renovation.
Yeah, there is no renovation. It's okay. It's part of Back to Omar. You should not renovate church or any place of worship except the mosque.
And this is how a religion dies in a country like that. If you are going to relegate people to second-class citizenship, dehimitude, there's no incentive. There's no earthly incentive. Let's just put it that way, to remain a Christian. But there is every earthly incentive to convert to Islam. So why would I want to stay a Christian if I'm kind of a nominal Christian to begin with? Why don't I just take my Shahada and convert on over? And then at the same time, the hard facilities of Christians across the region, you make it so hard for them just to perform simple things as, would you say, was replacing a toilet? Make it, it's just so terrible that they can't even replace a toilet.
Why even
try to bother? Go ahead, Brad.
John can testify to this. John can testify this better than I can. But I know I have read reports and seen videos where they have actually demolished historical churches because they decided to fix their toilet or they decided to fix their leaky roof. Okay, I mean, these are church buildings that are centuries old. These are historical monuments. And the Egyptian government will go in there and destroy it because why? Because they're in violation of building codes because they either fixed the toilet or fixed the leaky roof without the necessary permit. So therefore, the building gets condemned, it gets destroyed, and then they either, you know, well, pave it, put in a shopping mall, whatever, or another mosque, whatever. Either way, somebody takes that property and they take it over and convert it to something else. That is not
Yeah, that's right.
Is that correct?
What you say is right. And I would like to add something, especially in Egypt. Mm-hmm. If let us say we have a building, it's like 15 level or 15 floors, big building. There is a lot of taxes the owner of the place should pay to the government. If he build a small mosque in the ground floor, the taxes is over. He will not pay any tax. Yeah, that's true in Egypt.
That's clever.
You can build small. It's called zawiya. It's not even mosque. Zawiya. It's like 3 meters times 3 meters. Just to put word masjid or mosque on over it. If you do that, all taxes is removed from this house. Okay, there is no taxes by law.
Follow-up question, John: are churches taxed in Egypt?
Yeah, they pay electricity, pay taxes.
Really?
They should. They should give the government every year the income and outcome.
Now, wow. Is there any sense of equality? I mean, your average Egyptian citizen, let's just take your average Egyptian citizen. Don't they feel any sense of guilt? Or yes. Would they feel any sense of guilt for that type of
treatment? Last few years, there are people, but I can't say they are Muslims, but I can say they are atheists or agnostics. Appeared last 10 years, they spoke about equality between Muslims and Christians in Egypt. And they speak much. They have their channels on YouTube. They made a lot of articles in the news or the newspaper. But at the end, the majority have something inside their heart that hating Christians. The government is afraid from them because they are many. Especially in Upper Egypt, they are many. They can't do anything. If building is like house is burned or something, they speak. There is no court. There is no like case for what happened. No, just speak politely. Accept what happened. We'll give you some money to build a new house. That's maximum the government do, because the government knows well that the hate inside the heart are inside many people. Although there are some people are moderate, are good people speaking about secular state and equality, but they are minority. How many are them? 10, 20, 100? Egypt, 100 million people. And most of Christians are leaving Egypt.
When you talk about this hatred, John,
yes.
What's the source of the hatred? And where does that come from?
I'll tell you something. Most of the cases of burning houses of this stuff happens in Friday, after Jum'ah prayers of Friday. You know the source? I don't need to say. After prayer, look, this guy, this Nusrani kafir, praying inside his house. Let us attack it and make fire inside the house. That's it.
So this hatred...
This hatred comes from the imam and sheikh from the mosque itself.
Have you ever been? I wonder if anybody here has ever been in a church where we have been told to have a disdain, even a dislike, of somebody of another faith. You know, I've been to church virtually every Sunday my entire life, and I do not ever. And I'm not talking about just, you know, a Baptist church or a Lutheran church. I've been to all kinds of different churches. I've been to Catholic churches. I've been to Protestant churches, Methodist churches. I've even been to a Pentecostal church, which is, that is an event right there. Go to a Pentecostal church. And not one time has anybody, not even just a pastor, but even somebody in that I've had a conversation with, has ever talked about acting out against somebody of a different faith, ever. And that's a lot of sun. I'm up in my mid 50s. I mean, that's a lot of Sundays, and I don't ever remember this happening. And when you start talking about them coming out of their Friday prayers, it's like going to the Sunday service. The Friday prayers, if people don't realize this, is the equivalent, if I'm not mistaken here, you correct me if I'm wrong, is the equivalent of our Sunday service. And you coming out of that service with hatred in your heart to hurt somebody.
Have you ever been to a Friday service? That's the question then. Have you ever heard this? Have you ever heard the prayer after the Friday
I've been to a service at a mosque when I was in grad school. Who left? Chris? Busted. I'm going to write this down and duck his pay. When I was in grad school, we had to do a paper or take a class on diversity and education. And so I took a class. Oh, yeah. Okay. Thank you, Chris. I took a class on, or I took the class, I did my paper on Islam, the Islamic faith in education and how they are treated in education. And one of the things that I did was I went to four different Friday services, Friday Jumat prayer services for that. And I'm not, you know, we're in here in the United States and we're in a, you know, the Midwest where, you know, things aren't as, as radical as you might think. And, some of the things that they were saying, they were in Arabic, of course. And I didn't, I don't speak Arabic, so I wouldn't know. But I didn't hear any incitement when I was in those mosques. And I wouldn't, as a matter of fact, I went to one service. It was at night where they actually invited me in to have a dinner with them, which was, I thought was very, very gracious of them. And I didn't hear any excitement there, but I think, and this is just me thinking, knowing that somebody like me is sitting in the mosque with them, listening to the, what do they call the message in Islam?
The problem here is, sir, that you went in by telling them, I go to mosque every Friday, so and so that even my Westerner whom I work with know that on Friday you cannot have a meeting with this guy from this time to this time. Especially in Pakistan, they'll curse all the Christians and the Jews and the atheists inside the mosque. Oh Allah, kill them. Destroy them from the core. Give them the pains and the suffering. They are away from you. They are the kuffar is a very, very basic word that you will hear from their mouth when it comes to Christians and Hindus or atheists or whatever other than Muslims. Let's just put it this way. Because actually Quran, the so-called holy book of Islam, actually says that you are a dog. A donkey, a worst of all living creatures on the planet. So you are not even a human being. You're less than a human being.
Like, well, that's 98.6 stuff. Chapter 98.6. So yeah, the worst creature stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, there are so many. But like dog and donkey is pretty commonly stated. And persecution you guys take persecution very differently. In Pakistan, almost 400 to 500 Christian children are abducted every year and forcefully converted to Islam and married to a adult.
Now, these aren't, when you say children, we're not talking about male children.
We are talking about girls.
I'm talking about little girls. Exactly. Okay.
9, 10, 13, 12, 14. Very common. Very, very common. And in 2016, a law was, they were imposing a law that the conversion should not happen before 18. And there were riots in Pakistan. They said, this is not Islamic. Anybody can convert at any time. A 9 years old girl, a child, how can he or she, when they don't even know their own religion, how can they actually convert? Right? That's just simply rape. And let me quickly find a
While you're looking for that, I just want people to know, the listeners of this show, when people start second guessing what John or what Adam have to say, you know, for me, these guys have lived this. Adam was a devout Muslim, and I think John said that he was too. This is something that they practiced for many years of their lives. This is something that they heard their firsthand. And for anybody to come in and try to marginalize what they say, oh, he's just an Islamophobe, he's a hater. Have you ever considered, my question to you would be, is have you ever considered what their experiences were and how they've arrived at these suppositions, how they've arrived at the feelings that they have for this faith, and why there's so, both of them. So, I mean, I've never seen guys work harder on this on Facebook. And every time you turn on Facebook, they're on there doing something, for crying out loud. I've never seen people so dedicated to getting the word out about this than these two. So when we start talking about people who have lived this, you cannot deny somebody's personal testimony that has lived this and has gone through this. All right, Adam, I'm sharing your screen. Yeah,
this is Pakistan Today. This is not some normal. This is pakistantoday.com.pk. This is a Pakistan website. Around 1,000 children, Christian and Hindu women in Pakistan, are forcibly converted to Islam and married to Muslim when every year, okay, 100 to 700 victim Christian girls and 300 Hindu girls per year. So I was false earlier when I said 500. It's 700 out of these 1,000. This is the reality of the situation. I don't know how you can actually deny, or anybody can deny this. And if I go to BBC, this is BBC. Why are Christians in Pakistan being targeted? You will read so many stories, one after another over here. And these are the ones which are open in the media.
What's the percentage of Christians in Pakistan, if you know off the top of your head?
Yeah, like around 4%, 3 to 4%. And they are attacks on the churches. They go in, they torture the whole church because maybe somewhere down the street, some elder or some pastor would have said something and it would have become a blasphemy. Because obviously a pastor
Well, it doesn't have to be said something. There are document cases, okay, where somebody, you know, okay, so here, well, you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, Adam. You probably know more about this than I do. But my understanding of the way the blasphemy laws work in Pakistan is if a Muslim reports somebody for blasphemy, okay, and that person is later convicted of blasphemy, that person gets their property, pretty much. Okay, or gets a reward or whatever. Okay, there are cases, okay, where there is like a Christian business owner where the competition shows up to his place and says, hey, let me give you my card. The card has the word Muhammad on it, okay? And the Christian throws it in the garbage can because he doesn't want to go in business with these guys. So he throws it in the garbage bag. And then Muslims go back and they do dumpster diving, and they look for that card that is being thrown in the garbage. That card being thrown in the garbage because it has the name of Muhammad on it is now considered blasphemy. So then they report it. They foreclose or condemn or whatever or confiscate the Christian-owned business, okay? And then the Muslims come in and scoop it up who reported them.
Okay, scooping it up is something different. Okay. But yes, this is a true story. He actually threw the card right there and then into his dustbin because he was his rival anyways. Mm-hmm. So if my rival will come, I will throw the card in the dustbin right there and then. And he stepped back at that particular time. Then they did all that and they falsified it. So by law, the guy who did the blasphemy, his whole property and everything got foreclosed by the law. So now the Muslim would buy the whole thing in chip change by the family because this guy is already in prison. So okay. The other story is there's a husband and wife working in a brick. It's not a factory. It's like a, I don't know how to describe it. It's a village kind of a thing where you make bricks by hand and put them in a fiery furnace. Okay. The owner of that facility said that you guys did blasphemy, and four or five men literally threw that couple in the furnace.
Wow.
Right there and then. And that was a big news in Pakistan. You will not be able to find them in the high news channels, but you will be able to find them in the local news channels of Pakistan. It's like these kind of things happens every day.
There's another case that I remember reading about, actually several cases on this, where they can just go up and put on a Christian business owner's door, okay, you know, on the door jam, okay, where they put up, you know, words from the Quran or, you know, Muhammad's name or whatever, something they consider holy, tape it over, okay, the door, okay, and when the Christian owner comes up to open it up, he breaks that seal. In other words, they're making a seal of it. He opens it up and he breaks that. Well, that's now blasphemy because, well, what did you do? You just violated somehow, whatever. And again, it's the same deal. The Christian business owner is foreclosed, and then they pick it up for pennies on the dollar, the Christian family. Again, this is a targeted effort, okay, to persecute Christians and then take over their property and business. Okay. In other words, if you are a Christian living in Pakistan, for instance, okay, and you're getting too uppity, as they like to say, here in the north south of America, then guess what? They're going to do whatever they can to make sure that you break or infringe some kind of law, okay, where they can foreclose and take your property and take your business away from you.
This is really happening. Yes. And my friend, the blasphemy in Pakistan is so easy that if I'm a Christian and I just said Muhammad did this, that goes into a blasphemy level because the people will start slapping me or kicking me on my guts. Why? Because I did not say Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. So every Christian in Pakistan, whenever they take the name of Muhammad, they have to say Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam or they have to say Hazrat. So that's the whole situation. You can put blasphemy.
What does that second one mean?
Hazrat is the holy one, something like that. I can't even have the full translation of that.
So Muhammad is a holy one.
Yeah, the Hazrat. Isa can translate that. Isa, Hazrat, translate that.
Yeah, I would say what it means is like the holy one. I would totally agree. It's kind of like when you say Hazrat, someone or other, it's like you're giving them reverence. It's like Sahib. This is a kind of term that we use in South Asia. I wanted to actually kind of reinforce what Adam is saying. It's a really sad thing because South Asian culture originally was supposed to be this idea of sort of openness, but you know, at least on paper. But like, in the, and it's like there's this irony with the concept of Pakistan, because Pakistan's supposed to mean pure land, right? And the whole idea was Muslim people from South Asia would have their own country and have safety because they felt that Hindu people were persecuting them. But now we see that when the shoe is on the other foot and they have power, the minority is being oppressed. And it's like, and it's terrifying, and it's terrible.
You know what it's like, Issa? You know what it's like? It's like Animal Farm.
I know exactly what you mean. It is like that. Because they're saying we're being persecuted and we're being hurt. And then these, and then, what was the name of it? Napoleon? Was that the name of the pig that takes over, I think?
Right,
and
yeah.
Push out Snowball. It's actually kind of parodying like the communist revolution. But
sure. But that's exactly what you say with this with the example of India being part, when India was partitioned into the two different countries. Yeah.
It was just the three. This East Pakistan becoming Bangladesh. You have
Bangladesh. Yeah, right. Yeah.
And it's bad in both places. Like, I don't know. I think we would have done a lot better.
Dude, the Pakistanis in the 1970s, when they went to war, okay, with Bangladesh or East Pakistan or whatever it is, they butchered hundreds of thousands of people, dude.
Millions.
I mean, it was bad.
The 1971 Bangladesh massacre. That's why Bangladesh. Yeah. And it's really, and it's tragic. And it's like they're saying, oh, we're Muslim. We believe in Islam. But you're killing other Muslim people. Don't you say that Islam is so great? But I guess they're not real Muslims. Like, it's so, it is insane. And it is crazy. Well, and
people say a lot of times the most dangerous religion or the most dangerous religion that you can practice for being killed for it is being Muslim. And the scary thing is that it would be other Muslims that are killing you. Which
you're
is
right. Exactly.
And that I just can't understand that, make my wrap my mind around that. And it's because I grew up in a Western, you know, in a Western world where you're supposed to be respecting the rights, the liberties, and the freedom of thought and expression by other people. You don't have to agree with it, but you most certainly have to tolerate it. I mean, that's what our country was built upon, for Pete's sake. Is you're tolerating right. other people's perspectives and not trying to shut them down, but to engage in debate and dialogue. And that's what we find, that a lot of people, they don't even want to have that debate, especially here in the West, because when these ideas are challenged, as we found out here with this past week with this video that Yasser Qadhi made attacking Jay Smith, attacking David Wood. I think even went after the apostate prophet, for crying out loud. It clearly demonstrates, and you, if you listen to that video, the denigrating languages that he uses for people for daring to speak out, non-Muslims daring to speak out against Islam because they have no knowledge of that. Well, you know what? We can read, and that's the problem. We don't have to have somebody tell us what a book means, and we don't have to have somebody tell us what a religion means when we can actually read it for ourselves. Adam, you're sharing your screen again? Am I correct on that? You wanted to?
Yeah, I just changed the screen.
Yeah, so, go ahead.
In any
one thing, I just wanted to say that I support Brother Adam and Brother John. I know that they are, what you're saying is true. They are facing serious persecution, and it's a travesty. Like, I was watching some big thing where people are deflecting and saying, "Oh, this doesn't happen." It does happen. It's real. It's true. Right. And it's a travesty, and it's a human rights violation. So I want to speak out on both behalf and of both of them.
Right, and to report that, you're the one that is categorized as the hater when you start reporting that and when you start saying stuff like that. It's world upside down is what it is. It's crazy.
I'm sorry, please continue. I just was going to say that's what I want to say, that it is real what's going on. It's not false that particularly people that are called murtad, people who become apostate and they leave Islam, they face major persecution. I listened to that podcast about what Brother Hussein was sharing. Stephen, is that his name? I think.
Mm-hmm. Steve Hussein,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I was like, that's true. And it's horrifying. And he did make a good point. He said, in Christianity, you might be rejected from your family, but you don't have a chance of your life being put to death. And it's right. like,
that's what Dee brought up on you know, I think she was trying to equivocate on Christian converts to Islam versus Islamic converts to Christians.
It has to be, it needs to be globally abolished. There was a thing, I'm sure Brother Adam knows about this, there's a thing called sati. Sati was a practice in Vedic tradition, where, particularly in Bengal, where if a person died, and it was actually a Christian pastor, there's a movie about this, that was one of the major figureheads, and there was a Hindu, it was a dual effort to end this practice. But they, when a man would die, they get put in a funeral pyre. The woman would get, the wife would get thrown in too. And right. It became abolished in India. So this practice of killing apostates must be abolished everywhere. I don't care. It's a human rights violation.
See, you're going to get yourself in trouble because there are Sahih. Anybody who changes his religion, kill him.
Well, I don't care. It's evil and wrong. So I don't care what
it's
religion.
It's Sahih, Isa. You can't fight the machine here. All right, Adam, go ahead.
Yeah, sorry. So this is one of the major stories which came up, but this is not just one story. It's like hundreds of stories like that. By the way, what John actually described, this is the kind of a building that you will have with church, high walls, and then you have these iron rods around those high walls, and then there is a cross or something, and then there's like high walls and high walls. So they have to keep their church protected. Now, the problem was that there is a cross on top of it. You cannot actually see that it's a church unless you see a cross. And they have put a huge cross. So what happened was these people, these Muslim people around here, this is Punjab region, chuck number 336. This is near Faisalabad over here, right here. They said they cannot have a church and they have to remove the cross. And there was a full-fledged fight and everything. And this happens everywhere. If they will not be convinced, they will burn down the church. And look at the church. Like, they have to build churches like this. The only beautiful churches that you will see in Pakistan are the ones which were built before the partition by the English rulers. So England ruled Pakistan and India for almost 100 years. And they built few churches. They are beautiful churches. And they are historical buildings. That's why they are still there. Otherwise, they might have been demolished anyways. But this is the kind of a church that you will see in Pakistan more often, in the villages or etc. And yet again, they will persecute this building and they will not let it, like when this building was being built, nobody would have known that it's a church unless they put the cross, and then they have all these people saying it's not possible, we will not let this happen and all that, because this is a Muslim majority area. In Pakistan, you will have areas. There will be a small area where you can actually have Christian population. And those areas will be sometimes, especially in Islamabad, the major capital, they actually have walls around that area to confine Christian inside there. So they will have one area to get in and one area to get out, and that's it. So they have Christian communities where Christian lives, because the guy or the person has to be very well educated, being from that persecuted area. It's very hard for him to get the education and the money and the finances to get out of that area, and yet to find a house. And somebody will say, hey, you are a Christian per your ID card, because your ID card or your driving license or your passport will say religion Islam, religion Christianity. They might not even sell you, or they might sell you on an overprice. And when you actually build your house, you will have issues with your surrounding neighbors, because they are Muslims and they don't want you living there. These are the facts. You cannot run away from these facts. These are facts. I, myself, if I show my face in Pakistan, say I'm a murtad, I don't know, I will be able to see the next sunlight. That's how easy it is in Pakistan.
And it's just scary. And here's the thing, you know, when we have people that monitor the show and, you know, try to have it taken down and have some of the videos that we put out there. They'll mass report them to try to get them banned or whatever. And the reason for that is that they don't want the truth of this coming out. If they would focus more of their attention, I mean, the damage that we do here is minuscule. compared to what the help that they could do for their own faith system if they would speak out against the very things that you're talking about tonight, Adam. We got Ben Christian in the was watching YouTube, and you can see this comment.
Please bring him in.
I don't know how to bring him in via Facebook. He's on Facebook.
He's on YouTube. Send the StreamYard link in the chat comment.
You have to send the StreamYard.
Link in the actual chat comment on the YouTube by going to YouTube and bring him in.
So let me do this. Copy to clipboard. Okay. And there we go.
And while you are actually doing that, this is the problem because Muslims cannot say these things open because Muslims are doing it. If a Muslim like Kenny Boomer, assumingly, goes to Pakistan, stands in the middle of the street and say that this is blasphemy, law is wrong, we should not have this because Christians do not know rightfully and they should be forgiven for that, Kenny might not be able to take the next breath tomorrow. Yeah. That's how easy it is in Pakistan, man.
They don't understand that, though. Or it isn't that they don't understand. They don't want to believe it, because if they do believe it and if they do something like that, then that would confirm everything that we've said here on Radio Free Kafiristan or on the Cross and the Crescent discussion group. And they can't have that. They cannot have a confirmation of the truth. And when Ben wrote something here, where did it go? Here it is. He says, I was born in Iraq, and although I was young when I left, I still witnessed my share of violence. I can attest to that. I spent a year over there myself, and I remember succinctly we were in a convoy on the south side of Mosul, and it was a Friday, and they all kinds of people coming out of a mosque, and as we're passing by, I'm in what they call, I don't know if you know what an LMTV is. It's a big truck, and I'm riding shotgun, and we're running a convoy. And a kid sees the convoy. He runs across this field. And it wasn't a big field. It was probably about 20 yards wide. And he picks up a rock, and he's probably 11, 12 years old, maybe 13 years old. And the sheer hatred you could see in this kid's eye, because he got right up in the truck and he throws this rock and it hits the side of the LMTV. And you can see this vitriol, this visceral hatred of Americans, of American soldiers there, of course. But the fact was is that he was in this crowd that was coming out of this mosque that we were going by. So when we were mentioning before, when they come out of their Friday Juma prayers and they do things like this, I've seen it up close and personal myself.
It is proclaimed there in Juma prayers very easily. Like, that's very simple. That's very easy. So anyhow, I can go over on and on and on what's happening in Pakistan, but I don't know.
Like, well, we how much somebody dropped into jump in chat here. Heaven Bang, it's kind of a cool name. It says in Indonesia, it's so difficult or impossible to build a church, so we do worship in home or our congregation homes, and yet jihadi still came to our homes with machete and other sharp objects. Yeah.
Wasn't there an incident recently in Indonesia about several people being burned and killed? Like, wasn't there something
I had this article that I was going to go over by Raymond Ibrahim, and he's got instances here. This is the great point. This isn't just not isolated events in Pakistan, or it's not an isolated event in Egypt. Afghanistan, neither Christianity or other religion other than Islam is legal. Those Muslims who dare to convert to Christianity are seen as traitors to their family, tribes, and nations. Somalia is 99% Muslim. The Christian minority that exists in this African land consists almost exclusively of Muslim converts. Libya, the fourth most hostile country for Christians, after the fall of Gaddafi, Islamic militants seized control of various parts of Libya. And what he's doing is he's just giving you examples of where Christians are persecuted almost wholesale on a daily basis. Sudan is the sixth most dangerous place for Christians. Eritrea has earned the reputation for being Africa's North Korea. Congratulations. Yemen, Iran. So he's isolating all. He's not isolating. He's mentioning all of these places, and they all have one thing in common. And that one thing that they have in common is the faith that they practice. And that faith that they practice, as confirmed by people in the chat, as confirmed by the two Muslims that are sitting in our panel this evening, and they're speaking of not what they heard, but what they saw themselves. Let's see here. I got another guy here. Who's this? Rational phobia. Oh, that's good. Yes, in Sigi Sulawesi, Mujahideen murdered four Christians, burned their bodies, decapitation. Yeah. So as you can see, and I thank you, Ben. I appreciate you putting that there. As you can see, it isn't just an isolated part of the world. We don't see this happening. I don't think we see Christians being persecuted in, you know, if we're talking about the continent of Africa, do we see them being persecuted in the country of South Africa? I don't remember seeing anything on when you go to the Religion of Peace, anything that ever comes up there. I don't ever see a lot occurring, let's say, in Italy. That's a Christian country, I guess. Okay, we can't say that now. Poland, no, not there. Russia, I don't see Christians getting persecuted there. I don't see them getting persecuted in Cambodia, Japan, South Korea. No, we don't see it going on there. And even in Japan, where they're, you know, it's basically what do they practice there? Taoism? I might be wrong on that.
It's Shinto.
Shinto, that's right. Shintoism. Okay, so they're not being persecuted there. The only places that Christians are essentially being persecuted are, of course, North Korea, China, atheistic countries. But yes, all Muslim countries. When we look at, all Muslim countries across the globe, they're persecuted. I remember watching a, and I admit this, and I'm gonna. This is kind of my my confession here. When you go to a priest, Catholics go to priests and they make their confession. I'm going to confess this. I watched a Zachary Knight video one night.
No,
I did. Yes, I did. Yeah. And
read verse 43, verse 32.
Yes, and this Zachary Knight video. Zucker was explaining why they do not allow Bibles in the country of Saudi Arabia. And this was his explanation. He said that the reason why we do not allow Bibles in the country of Saudi Arabia is the same reason why we would not allow math textbooks that would teach 2 + 2 = 5. We are so sure that Christianity is wrong, we do not even want the possibility or the ability for a Bible to get into the country. That's the logic of their most popular apologist. Not their best, but their most popular.
Well, that makes sense. Well,
the thing that's really difficult about that whole narrative is to really the Quran as a text has a lot of gaps, in a sense. Like when you're looking at like the protagonist.
Hold. We say hold. Like, the Quran has holes
like,
in
the
it.
Okay. Prophetic text, for example. Like, we look at the prophetic protagonists, right? Peace be upon him. Peace be upon them.
Where does it say in Quran, peace be upon them?
But that's just like, I was joking, like the Muslim culture.
It doesn't
but,
say that. It's sallallahu alayhi wa sallam.
Or alayhi salam, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, right?
So, like, there's nothing peace be upon him. Islam.
Adam, don't fact check the joke. Okay, keep going. I'm sorry.
So the opinion, the situation that I was thinking about is, see, the Tanakh, or what you might call the Old Testament or Hebrew scriptures, or and even if we look at New Testament, there's a much more expansive narrative and characterization of who these protagonists are. Who are their children? Who's the genealogy? What's the genealogy? You have all of that. You don't really have that in the Quran. So like when I look at the Quran, I have very limited characterization. So let's take, you could take Musa, Moshe, Moses, the prophet, and look at the narrative. He's mentioned like, I don't know, like 25 times in the Quran, but it's not a really deep characterization. I don't really know a lot about his family from the Quran. I don't really know the kind of narrative. I don't even think they have Pesach, the Passover. I don't think the Passover narrative is there. I don't think Muslims even know about Passover at all.
No, they don't. They don't. The most important Jewish holiday, they have no clue.
It's actually very important to Christianity. Passover is the major center of Christianity, and Yom Kippur. These are the major elements.
Right,
of,
and it's but it's mentioned in Christianity. I'm going to let you go here, but on top of that, Jerusalem's not even mentioned in the Quran.
And this is really weird stuff, I think, because I'm like, look, Passover is a major thing. The 10 plagues. I've talked to Muslims. They don't know what the 10 plagues are. I'm like, this is like major common knowledge. Like, this is super important to know this narrative. And I'm like, if I don't have this text, I'm really not going to know what's going on, because what I feel happens, and I mean, I think this is a really honest space where we can talk about this. What I think really happens is, what the Quran tries to do is like everybody's just the same thing. They're all Muslim people, but they're not. We're not really looking at them as Hebrew people, and I think that's a problem. We need to look at their culture, and I think that is a more honest thing that Christians do. Is they say, look, we have this text here, we have the Tanakh, and we want to see these Israelite prophets as Israelites. We don't want to see them as European people. We want to see them as who they are in their culture and their religious practice. You know, even if we might not do those practices because there's a second covenant, we recognize those practices existed. And I think you have to understand that to understand who these people are. But like, I feel what happens in Islamic tradition is there's like this white brush that just whitewashes everything, or Muslim washes everything. Everybody's a Muslim. And I'm like, these people didn't pray five times a day. They didn't fast Ramadan. They didn't do Hajj to Mecca. Because I remember, I think Radical Moderate had asked me this, Chris asked me, it's like, do you think that they were Muslim? I'm sure they weren't, because a Muslim, according by definition, is the arkan of Islam, right? The five pillars and the seven creeds, right? They didn't do any of them. There was no Salat. There was no Ramadan. There's no Hajj. There's no Shahada.
You're so right on that, because what a lot of times what you'll run into is when we get into these discussions, they'll say, well, Jesus was a Muslim. No, he wasn't. Oh, well, you just don't understand what the definition of a Muslim is. That's just somebody who's submitted.
Muslim means one who submits. Right.
So when you start asking them about the, you know, well, did Jesus, because you know, Jesus was Muslim, did he pray five times a day? No. Did he do a Hajj? No. Did he face? No, he didn't do any of these things.
Not either, because the zakat is 2.5% of your wealth. According to Jewish law or Hebrew law, you have to do the tithing, which is 10% of your wealth. Israelite people have to give 10% of their wealth to those who are poor. That's the law. So there's no zakat, no Ramadan, no salat, because there's a thing called davening. There's a prayer that you do. Like you have these prayers that you do three times a day, and you read these Torah portions and stuff like that. But that is, it's not like salat. Davening is not at all like salat. There's no bowing down at it.
Isa, you kafir kabir, you. Don't you understand? Don't you understand that they forgot all this stuff? You see, the Jewish people who actually wrote down their history and actually practiced their history throughout history forgot all this stuff. They forgot that they did Ramadan. They forgot that they prayed five times a day in a special certain way. They forgot all this stuff somehow. And Muhammad, remember, what does the Quran say? He is only a reminder. He's reminding the people of all the stuff they forgot that, I'm sorry, Muhammad invented or stole from other pagan cultures. By the way, how much time we got to get? Because I did want to read something.
I want to add something to Isa before you go in.
6 minutes.
Quran actually talks about Sabbath. Quran talks about Sabbath. So we know there was some Sabbath, and we know the people who broke the Sabbath, they became monkeys, apes.
And
that's what Quran says. And pigs, yes. And that's what Quran says. And then Quran actually says that fish would only come on the day of Sabbath. Allah is the most pagan God in the history of Godhood, that he would bring the fish on the day of Sabbath and not on any other day, but he would ask them not to do fishing on Sabbath. Like, what kind of a pagan God Muhammad actually introduced? And then these people actually defend that. Sorry, please carry on.
I want to say one thing I wanted to add to that. I also find that it's sort of anti-Semitic, or we could say anti-Jewish, when we say Jewish people are turned into pigs and apes. First of all, we don't even know, the Quran does not tell us what the Shabbat or the Sabbath is. We don't know what it is. We just know it's a day of rest. We don't know what the rules are of it. Like, and that's what, I think these are the issues of, like, when if you ban the Bible, if you're saying I'm going to ban all these texts, whether you agree with them or not, like, because there are things that people say, well, the prophets did these bad things and we believe that the prophets are ma'asum or blameless. I'm like, that still doesn't work because you don't have context. If I read about Sabbath, I won't know what a Sabbath is if I read the Quran or even Hadith. Nothing is going to tell me what Sabbath is. Nothing is going to tell me what these prophets are. They just said, well, they believe in Allah, or I don't even know if they wouldn't have used that word. They would have used a word like Hashem, Adonai, some other type of term that of that culture of Hebrew or what is that word? Aramaic. It would be something like that. So I don't know. It's just, it's problematic. That's what I'd have to say. It's deeply
Brad, problematic. You had one more thing to add before we go.
Okay. I got 4 minutes here. Well, if you guys haven't read The Martyrdom of Perpetua, I highly suggest you all do. It is one of the documents that is actually one of the earliest accounts of an actual Christian martyr. Perpetua was a noble woman, if you don't know the story, who converted to Christianity. She had a child, but she converted to Christianity and she was caught being a Christian. She was tried. Her father begged and pleaded for her to renounce Christianity, said, think of your son. And she said, I only think of Christ. She was thrown to the wild beast. But let me just read an excerpt from this really quickly here. Okay, to demonstrate how Christians honestly think how we should face martyrdom or persecution. Finally, the day of the grim birthday celebration arrived. The Christians were led from the prison to the amphitheater, walking with joy in their hearts and on their faces. When instructed to put on the clothing worn by priests and Roman deities, Saturn and Ceres, as part of the party's sick pageantry, they refused. The tribune overseeing the proceedings agreed that they could wear their own clothing as they were led past the procurator who had condemned them. The Christians called out, "You have judged us, but God will judge you." Because of this, the impertinence of the crowd demanding that the Christians be scourged before the wild animals were released. Fast forwarding here. The two young mothers were stripped naked and given nets to wear. Then they were thrown into the arena where a wild bull, yet while the animal trampled and kicked at them, Perpetua seemed unconcerned with the brutal animal, carefully binding up her disheveled hair in order to meet her death, with as much dignity as possible. Think about that, people. This woman who's a Christian, who is going to be marred and and torn apart by wild beasts, fixes her hair to make sure she is representing a proper presence for her execution. And to me, that is why a Christian should face their death. Make sure you look good.
And they do it every day. They do it every day.
Amen.
And that's what this this show is about. And to make sure that, you know, this doesn't just occur in a vacuum, and to ensure that people who would dare to try to question these facts or try to marginalize you, me, or Chris for daring to mention it, we can sit here and we can point to Muslims who've lived this, who were devout in their faith, sit here and look and chat. Muslims in the chat, living or people living in Muslim-majority countries that will vouch for these things. And, you know, this is how societies end, folks. When you try to silence those people who would dare to speak out about this, how's that saying go? Issa, you would know that. You would know this. You only need to fear those whom you may not criticize. Isn't there something that says you can't only fear those you are not allowed to criticize? It goes something on those lines. So if you're allowed to criticize somebody and nobody says anything to you, well, what are you accomplishing? But if you do provide a criticism and that criticism results in you being persecuted, you being marginalized, you calling these names, then that's what you know that you need to fear, something like that. And that's what we do here on Radio Free Kafiristan. And I love that story. I just brought the Britannica article up on that.
Read the whole thing. It's powerful. Just to let you know, you Christian young single men, if you're dating and the woman that you're dating asks you what your perfect wife is and you say Perpetua and they read up on it, you're never going to get a second date. I'm telling you, that's my experience, because I'm looking for my Perpetua and you're like, are you crazy? That's not me. I'm not doing that. I'm like, yeah, okay. You know,
I have the quote for you.
Brad is surprised to begin with anyway.
Here's the quote. To learn who rules over you, simply find out who you are not allowed to criticize.
There we go. That's exact. That's what it is. Thank you. Yeah. To say that one more time.
Sure. To learn who rules over you, simply find out who you are not allowed to criticize.
Amen. Okay. All right, everybody. My goodness, we've had a lot of people in chat tonight. We got I can't even pronounce it, from Jerusalem, whatever. Thank you for coming. Heaven Bang was here. Nim Grace. Now, this person's been here, was here on Sunday also. And then everybody else that was in chat, let me see if I missed anybody. Ben Christian was here. And then, of course, everybody that was on the panel tonight. John, thank you so much for your insight tonight. Adam, Rad, Dr. Radical Moderate, we appreciate that. Issa, you're always a blessing to have on the show. I'm going to forget somebody. Chris was here. Was anybody else here? It doesn't matter. They know who they are, and they know that they're appreciated. Thank you again, everybody, for coming to Radio Free Kafiristan. Every Tuesday evening at 5 p.m. Central Standard Time. And I would also add, on the Global Patriot Radio Network, if you ever get a chance to get over Blog Talk Radio, go ahead and bring up the Global Patriot Radio Network, because we have a show on the Global Patriot Radio Network every single day of the week. Of course, we have on Mondays the Vito Esposito show, Mamma Mia, No Sharia with him and Big L. Here on Tuesdays, of course, is Radio Free Kafiristan. On Wednesdays, it gets a little political and sports. It's called Poly Sports with Hank Jones. And then on Thursdays, this guy is a real treat. He's a published author, good friend. Paul Sutliff has what he calls the Sutliffian Report. And then on Fridays, I always miss this Conservative Casual Friday. And then on Saturdays, it's the big man himself, Usama Duck Duck, revealing the truth about Islam. And then, of course, on Sundays, we have
all those people are 100% verified Islamophobes. God bless them. Love them all.
They are. So. They definitely are. Okay, folks, again, thank you for coming. And we will see you next week on Radio Free Kafiristan. See you Sunday at the
Cross. Kafir Akbar and Mega Akbar, as always.
Kufar Akbar. All right. We'll see you guys. Be good.